I don't work at Toast and Jam anymore. I'm just the owner. I will say it has been a mind F to be kind of thinking about what my life is going to be. I'm not the right person for this job anymore.
Welcome to Hitting the Ceiling, the show for entrepreneurs and leaders who refuse to let a ceiling become the end of their story. Today, I'm joined by Mary Nisi, founder of Toast and Jam DJs in Chicago. She's DJed for President Obama twice. She's been featured in NPR, The Atlantic, and Martha Stewart Weddings. But today's really not about the highlight reel. This is about what happens when 564 weddings disappear overnight, when the business you spent 20 years building has its first unprofitable year ever. And it's about what happens after you rebuild, when the company finally works without you, and you have to answer a question most entrepreneurs never think to ask. If the business doesn't need you anymore, who are you really? Mary, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Let's just dive right in. And one of the things in that intro, you had 564 weddings on the books when the world shut down. Can you take me to that day? What was the first thing that broke? And you know, what was that moment of realization?
I mean, at the time, I didn't realize what the dam was. I didn't realize what was happening because, as you said, we had hundreds of events on the books for 2020 on the day of shutdown in March of 2020. I guess that was the year. Initially, we all thought this was going to be like 2 weeks. And so it wasn't that big of a deal. It was like, okay, we have weddings this weekend. The weekend before shutdown, like two people had canceled their weddings. They were trying to move them. And I'm like, this is weird. What alarmist behavior. And then everything shut down. And then it was, you know, 2 weeks. And then it was, you know, so the people who were like supposed to be on that 1 week moved to like a month later. And then that moved from a month later to June. And then from June into 21. I mean, it was crazy. So initially we were just kind of shifting things. And then when it became clear that this was going to take a lot longer, it was weird. It was like, I blacked out, I think, emotionally. And also realized it's like that time is like a black hole in my head. The bigger problem was that my longtime employee who had been running everything, because prior to 2020, I've been in business since 2025 or since 2005. And when I had my son in 2014, I'd put a full-time employee in place and they were running everything. And I was still technically there. Like I was working, but like she was doing everything. And I kind of was just doing unfun things like contract negotiations and complaints and things like that. But I was really, I kind of had one foot out the door. And then when lockdown happened, she had an infant, so she had to leave and couldn't work for me anymore. And I didn't even know how a contract was made at that point. Like I had really, prior to that, I had owned Traction. I had been trying to implement it on my own. I had gotten a coach who was kind of using pieces of it. So I had the sort of like little bits of it kind of helping me out, but I hadn't fully implemented it. And I was forced to have to come back into the business when I didn't even know how things were running. I didn't know how a contract even was made, but it didn't even matter because nothing was the same from that moment on. I would wake up in the morning to like 160 emails overnight from people whose weddings were in the next year being like, what are you going to do? And they were all acting like the pandemic was only happening to them. So I'm dealing with hundreds of people who are all calling me a monster because I didn't have a plan for a pandemic. Experienced. I know. Can you believe that wasn't in my my force majeure? So I had to relearn how to do everything, and it was really bad. And I'm trying to homeschool my son. Now I've got, you know, my husband's at home now, so I've got people all around me, and it was a completely different scene. So I was struggling. Like it was really bad. And I brought in one of my DJs came in to kind of help me try to get things through. And it was okay to, I mean, it was actually, she was great. It was great to have somebody there to kind of help mop up the mess of what was going on. But I came to realize that how we were running things wasn't sustainable, at least not without me being completely involved. And when everything breaks, I didn't know how to put it back together again, because, you know, prior to my first coach that I got in 2017, which was, you know, I guess 13 years into my business, like I had run things my way. I had made it up. Like DJ, there's no DJ companies for dummies when I started.
No, it's not everywhere. It's not common knowledge.
No, there's no brain trust of how to run one of these. And so I didn't want to deal with that anymore. And I lost those audits because I had too much control, because I was training people. And in Illinois, and I don't know if this is federally, but you know, the business can't do what the contractor can't do what the business does. So it's a DJ company, they're DJs, therefore the relationship isn't the right one for 1099. So I went, so when I got the coach to actually help me transition the business from 1099 to W-2, and that was using Traction, and so, or EOS, or Light EOS. I don't think they were a true implementer. I think they were just kind of using like tools or whatever. Oops, I don't know if that was legal. Anyway, so I converted everybody to employees, and that just changed my entire business. Like I wasn't able to run on the moxie of it all. And I didn't know what I was doing. So I had to hire somebody to help me get through that. And that was a really long, ridiculous process. When I made everybody employees, it changed everything. Now I've got payroll companies and all of these new HR elements from the payroll thing. And I've got to have an employee handbook and all these other things that have nothing to do with running a DJ company and serving my clients and helping my employees. It's all just regulation and things that I don't understand. And I feel like I just kept getting like dared to make a mistake almost. It's like, It's like they don't tell you anything. It's like, start a business. Cool. Good luck. And you know, it's whether you either have it or you don't. And that's why businesses fail pretty quickly, is because they get into this place of where they can't handle. They have like the idea that made them amazing and made it so that they could start this business, going up against like, you know, this immovable wall of, you know, opaque like regulation and things you have to do. And so that was a real tough transition, but we were getting it. It was all kind of coming together. Like, you know, 2017 was a little bit iffy, but then 2018 was better and 2019 was better. And 2020 was going to be my year. That was our year. We were going to like, you know, and we went into it. We had, you know, 564 weddings on the day of lockdown. We'd already done probably 40 events before that. And we were probably going to book another 80 to 100. So that was going to be a huge year for us. So when we got into the pandemic and we're trying to rebook things, and then we had to deal with the reopening of, you know, once things started reopening, we started having weddings again, and then people were violating the rules, and it was tough, because I don't know how to have 25 employees that I'm trying to keep alive. And, you know, I was able to put them all on unemployment, which was great, because I was now an employer. They were W-2. So I was able to help them out more. But for me, it just was a lot. It was tough. And so I had the team. We were all kind of coming together to make the weddings that were in 2020 happen in 2021. I wound up having to DJ whole season. I hadn't done a stranger's wedding in like 4 years prior to 2020. And so through COVID, I lost some DJs, and people would move their dates to where we didn't have any other DJs available. So all of a sudden, I'm doing a full season. So I had a full season in 21, a full season in 22. And then I had to miss like a little event of my son's. My son was singing in this little pageant, and I had to miss it because I had to take a wedding, and I was watching it over FaceTime, like in between ceremony and cocktail hour. And I'm like, this sucks. Like, this isn't why I started this business, to be 20 years deep or at that point, 15 years deep in it. And this can't keep happening. I am done. I shouldn't be missing my children's things. Like, I own this business. I should be able to control this. And I had no control over it. Like I didn't have a handle on it. I need to marry proof this company. I need to make it so that I'm not the bottleneck on anything. No one's waiting on me for anything. I'm not the answer for anything. I don't want anybody calling me for anything, which I thought was like, in that moment, it was a kind of like a crazy like light bulb of like, is this something I can do? Like, can I? Is this possible? Yeah. Like, can I own my business but have nothing to do with it? Because I know that there's other people. Like, I know people where I'll meet them and I'll be like, oh, yeah, like, I own this company. And I'm like, what do you? And they're like, but I'm just the owner at this point. I mean, initially it comes down to the moxie. Like, I like I said, I had a degree in art history, and there's not a whole lot of future in that, like unless you go in and be like a curator or whatever. So I didn't have like, I didn't like go to school for business and then become a business person. Like I had to like, right. I literally didn't know what I was doing. I did retail, then I started taking improv classes, and then I started DJing. Like I have weird, I have like these sort of, and nothing felt right. And so when I started Toast and Jam, I'm like, this has to work. I don't have anything else. Like I don't have anything else. So this has to work. And so, but I also am like a Gen X fantasy, and I'm also like real, I'm suspicious of everything. I don't like the man. I, you know, I am very like, why do we do it that way? Well, I'm gonna do it my way. I'm very into doing things my way. And if I see how something's going and it doesn't make sense, I'm gonna figure out a way to make it mine. And I also like have a very like kind of a punk rock ethos where it's like, you know, I'm very liberal. I had a women-owned business. I am very empathetic to, you know, all groups and especially, you know, marginalized, whatever. So everything has kind of gone through a lens of, can I still look myself in the eye on doing these events? But for the most part, I would say 90% of the events that we did, it was like, I can't believe I get paid to do this. Like mm-hmm. that was sort of the amazing thing about this job is that most nights we make a joke that we DJ for free. It's just pretty expensive to get us to bring our gear places. and so, you know, it's an amazing job when it's great. 10% of the time, it is so awful that it's over at midnight, you know, like where you've got like some drunkle in your face that won't stop requesting meatloaf. And you're just like, why aren't you leaving me alone? Go have fun someplace else. So the systems are very important. The systems are very important to making sure that, because it was run completely by me at that point. I mean, I always had between 5 and 25 DJs at any given time. Like the first year, I think I had maybe 5 DJs that I brought on. And then by the mid-teens, I probably had 25 DJs that I was going out. And we were doing like 40 events a weekend and never got complaints. We got maybe one complaint a year. Like I was really good at running this company and keeping it all together, a tight ship, and everything was great. Everyone was trained perfectly.
Experiencing something you've never experienced before. How did that affect your overall confidence in your capabilities and as a leader?
That's a great question. It affected them poorly. It was not a cool time in my heart or in my brain. You know, I'm as a leader, just in general, I'm really good at making sure people understand the rules and like, this is what you can do and this is what you can't do. And I was able to get everybody kind of line up behind me. The pandemic, I think really, it scared people, obviously. And I think we also started getting different attitudes towards bosses, like, or not boss, but you know, like the man, I guess, for lack of a better word, is, you know, it's like they, you know, they don't know if whatever you're asking them to do is going to kill them. They don't know, like, you know, everyone can just see their money disappearing, and it just everything became more transactional. And there seemed to already there be a distrust that was brewing towards me. I was feeling more animosity towards the DJs in a way that I'd never experienced before. Like, and I'm a little bit boundaryless. Like my toxic trait as a boss is I want everybody to like me and I want everyone to still think I'm their friend. And that's always been that. I would say if one of my worst qualities as a boss is that I want everyone to like me too much. That's, I don't want people to like talk poop about me behind my back. And
Do you have a little bit of difficult time differentiating between serving and pleasing people?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think I've ever thought about it in that way, but yeah, I'm really good at serving my clients, but I want to please my DJs. Like I want to make them, because they're the ones that are going to be there when everything's over. Like most of our clients work with us one time. And so I feel like it was really important to me to make sure that the DJs felt that I was taking care of them. And I think for the most part, they got that. And they, you know, they know, like if there's ever a complaint about them, I will go to the mat to make sure that they are not being unfairly maligned for something because someone was just like, my wedding wasn't as princessy as I thought it was going to be. And they get, because those are the kind of complaints we get. We don't get very complaints where it's like, the DJ did this and it was wrong. And I'm like, yeah, that really shouldn't have done that. Like that I would say that's maybe five, not even that many times, maybe three times a DJ's actually done something where I'm like, why the hell did you do that? Like, for the most part, it's always like, it just wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be. And I'm like, I can't make your family cool. Like I can't fix your friends. Like I can, you know, this is very much a lead a horse to water. I can't make them drink. And after the pandemic, it felt like they didn't, and I don't have, they haven't said this to my face, but it felt like they just were distrustful of me, of like, what is Mary going to make me do? And Mary's not going to make you do anything, which is, you know, and a lot of other DJ companies were very much like, you've got to go to this 200 person wedding, even though the limit's supposed to be 50. And, you know, and they were doing all these very unethical things. And so I can see why they would have distrust towards me, but I was very respectful of what I was put, I knew what I was putting them in front of when it came to danger, you know, and things like that. So I made plastic DJ screens. I made request lines. I had microphone covers to change in between toasts. I mean, I made chain things to put on either side of the table so that people couldn't come behind the table and try to talk to them. Like I went so far to like try to make them feel, you know, taken care of, and it still didn't matter. So it was at the end of that first year, I remember I had to stop taking a salary. I didn't, and luckily my husband had a job still, so it wasn't bad for, I mean, I was able to still kind of be, how do I say this? Financially, I was okay because I could still rely on my husband's income, but like I didn't take a salary. I was only paying my full-time employee. I remember we had a staff meeting over like at the end of the year to over Zoom to like just sort of thank them for the weird year that we had. And one of the DJs asked if they were getting bonuses that year. And I was no. And she's like, well, why not? This was a tough year and we deserve money. And I'm like, I'm really sorry. I got off that call and I was like, I basically was sobbing for like 2 hours, like after that call. Cause it was like, I want to give you bonuses. I want to give everybody a bonus. I've always been generous, but I couldn't be. And that was when I realized like, this is the end. This, like, it felt like the beginning of the end.
Now, do you think that was a result of sort of the people pleasing leadership style that you came in with, that now everyone can just ask anything and they expect you to cater to it?
Wow. You're really good at this. You're like, yeah, that is what that felt like. Wow. Where have you been my whole life? I like haven't thought about things in this way before. But you're probably right. I mean, actually you're definitely right, because I did have to completely change. Well, I mean, it took me a while to kind of figure it out, but I've had to become more closed off, and I've had to become less available and less pleasing, which, you know, then it changes the culture. It really, I mean, and I really realized via that the culture is so important. Like it's so important. And I think because I had done a pretty good job of building culture from the very beginning, because I was very clear, like, we're cool. We don't do this. I'm going to protect you against that. Like and they all knew that I had their back on everything, that, and I had to have their back because they were working for me so far into the future. Like I couldn't just fire someone without it being a huge problem. And our whole thing was like, we match you with the DJ that, you know, from the very beginning, and you're with that person the whole time. So if I were to be like, oh, I'm firing this DJ and then I have to change their DJ, the client's going to hate me, and my reputation's going to be ruined because one of my three uniques is that they're going to, you know, have their DJ from the very beginning the whole time. And if I take that away, isn't that going to destroy my business? Well, the pandemic taught me that's no, actually, as a matter of fact, they just want a DJ. And even though that's a nice perk to know their DJ the whole time, if you have to change them out, it's not the end of the world. And that was a huge thing for me to learn, because that was what kept me, in many ways through over the years, I would have DJs that I knew were not out there doing a good job. I knew they weren't 100% doing what I wanted to do. I wasn't getting complaints about them, but they weren't being necessarily cool to me, and other DJs would be grumbling about them. But I'm like, but they've got 72 weddings booked over the next year and a half. And for me to have to find a different DJ for 72 weddings is crazy. I can't do that. The pandemic taught me that yes, I can. I can actually do that. And so I kind of realized, I'm like, oh, I can change this and this is okay. I can take out a DJ that's messing up my life and it won't kill my business. So that was kind of an interesting lesson to learn. It's interesting. It's like the DJs became less trustful of me and I became less protective of them, interestingly, in a way I've never thought about before. But it did give me some relief to know that I could do that. And so, you know, the DJs were doing all the sales before. They are still doing all the sales at this point. And then I brought in a new, when I decided that I needed to marry proof the business, I had brought in a new operations person at that point. Her name's Melissa, and she is, she, like, when they talk about putting the right butts in the right seats, being like one of the EOS tenants, making sure you've got the right people in the positions, I always thought I had that. Like, I'm like, this person's cool. They're great. They're gonna be good at this. They never, like, it was like, I've had great people in great seats before, but I have let people stay in the wrong one for way too long. Cause once I let them in, I'm like, I don't want to let them go. I don't want to hurt their feelings. They're not that bad. And meanwhile, they're like crashing the plane into the ocean. But when I brought Melissa in, at the same time, I brought Lorraine in, my EOS implementer, which I think was great to have somebody that didn't, for Melissa to come in at a time when she had no baggage. And so it was easier for her, I think, to be able to implement these things and help, these things made more sense to her because she didn't know what came before. And so it was wonderful to have that sort of division between the before times and the after times. And Melissa would come in and ask questions like, why do we do it this way? You know, the annoying things I used to do to people. And I would be like, well, because this is how it has to be. This is the best way and nobody can do it any other way. And this is, again, where the moxie lines up with my lack of, you know, business, you know, like the truisms of business or the things. Because when I would be going to conferences and things before with other DJ companies, they'd be like, how do you have the DJs do the sales? Like, nobody had ever heard of that. And I'm like, I don't know. That's just how I've always done it. Like, I don't know any other way. And then I came to realize that the reason why they don't do it that way is because unless I'm incredibly involved in the process, it can't be, well, it's not so much that. It's hard to get to the next level of business-wise when you're kind of keeping it that way because, you know, you're at the mercy of how they're selling. And if they're not selling the way the person, DJ A is selling one way and DJ B is selling another way, they might be selling two completely different weddings. Even though they're out there doing a great job and they're not getting complaints, there's just an inconsistency of what they're doing. And so I had to fix, so, you know, by doing the sales in-house and then farming it out, it's like, then that I get that model. So now we're doing that, like how, but we're not doing it 3 months out. We're still doing it at a year, year and a half out, like whenever the date is, but we're doing, now we had to, we brought the sales in-house, which was a Sisyphean task. Oh, I mean, except it actually worked. I guess it wasn't Sisyphean. I guess it was just Herculean. There we go. We brought the sales in-house, which was a huge process. And Lorraine really helped get us kind of, cause I didn't know how to do that. Like I didn't, I had to relearn everything. We basically, this company doesn't resemble almost anything that it looked like before the pandemic.
How do you balance that from a leadership perspective and have high standards at the same time?
My way of feeling, of living what you just said, you know, being, you know, trying to be rebellious, but also still giving, I mean, because I'm in an industry that is where, you know, it's, image is very important. And, you know, making sure, like, you, and weddings are a thing where you don't get mulligans, you know, like you've got one chance to do it. And so I thrive in those kinds of environments. Like I love, I mean, I like it when I'm like, where things could fall apart at any moment. And like, I can, you know, like that is sort of a thing that, like, I kind of thrive in that environment. And I kind of hire people that also like have a live fast, die young kind of, you know, attitude, but without that being, that's a metaphor. And so, the way I say to the DJs is like, you know what feels right. Like your gut is very important in this situation. And so, you know, I don't care how you pull it off as long as, you know, you're in a team environment with a bunch of other people, because you've got a photographer, you know, the caterer, the, you know, video, floral, everybody has to work together. And so we can't have people there with giant egos that are going to be like, it's my way or the highway. Like, you have to be adaptable. And you also have to understand that at the end of the day, like, you're there to make these other people happy. It's not about you. And, but you also have, you have power in that room too. So it's the idea of understanding the difference between, like, you know, I want to go in there and do the best I can. I don't, it's all about the couple, but also I'm strong in this moment. Like, I deserve to be there. I am there because they trust that I can do this. And so because I mostly hired women, it's like I was basically like a feminist coach in some ways around this, because I was bringing women into places where there normally aren't women. This is a very male dominated industry. Still to this day, almost every time I DJ, someone's like, I've never seen a woman doing this. And I'm like, why did you feel okay saying that to my face? Also, you probably have. I've been doing this for 20 years. How am I the first female DJ you've seen? I think women, especially when it comes to their weddings, whether they want to admit it or not, they've been thinking about it since they were five. And I think women are by nature, you know, caretakers and pleasers, whether we want to admit it or not. And so when we go into these things, it is, you know, you belong here. You have a bead on this that I would say that, you know, men don't have, because they haven't necessarily been thinking about their wedding since the day they were born. And we are able to tap into like the energy of it in a way that I think that is really unique and awesome. And I think that just by bringing women into that space, that is punk rock. That is, you know, that is revolutionary. And because of that, and the, like, we don't play this songs, we don't do these things, like we're saying no to a bunch of things. And in spite of all of that, we have the best reputation in the city. We've got hundreds and hundreds of 5-star reviews out there. Like, actually, I just was on a text string with some new mom friends, and someone saw my email and they're like, oh my God, you did my wedding in 2015. And she sent me a screenshot of a quote that I sent her, you know, 10 years ago. And nice. It's like, you know, and Emma's like, I'm like, was it good? And she's like, of course it was. Like, and that's the other thing, is that when people tell me they've used us, I always go into it confidently believing that it had to be amazing, because it's never like, they were fine. And I have a good attitude towards my DJs and what I've been able to train them how to do.
Punk rock is the best way to say it. And at the same time, have standards of excellence on the other side without letting the vibe of anything goes and nothing matters, and be able to deliver consistent results where the maths, and, you know, like the conversation about, hey, we made no money this year, where's my bonus? Because we deserve it. I'm just wondering if there's like a little bit of two sides of the same coin with that, the punk rock and you should pay me even though we made no money.
Yeah, and that's it. God, you're really good at this. I think that punk rock is not, I mean, punk, people might see punk rock as like angry. I see it more as authenticity. I see it more as like integrity. And like when I, what, like our core values for Toast and Jam, if you'd like to know, are accountability, adaptability, authenticity, and integrity. So those are our four guiding lights. And I think those all kind of fall under the umbrella of punk rock. Like, you know, you're accountable. Like, you said you're going to do something, you're going to do it. You've got people that brought 200 people into this room. You have to make all those people happy, and you have to figure out a way to do it. And you might have people that are from other countries, from the South, from the North, from, you know, different neighborhoods, different backgrounds. I mean, so it's like you have to find a way to make all those people happy. You have to be adaptable. Like, things can change in a heartbeat. All of a sudden, the caterers, the ovens went out, and now dinner's pushed back by 45 minutes. So how do we make it so that the room doesn't know that, but we still get everybody entertained and fed, and then we get a dance set afterwards? Like, it's a very, like, you know, we're all in this together, but we all have to figure out how to make it work for everybody else. Like, you know, we could put anything on a piece of paper and call it a timeline, but where the rubber meets the road, like, you know, it's, there's humans here that are going to make things happen. You've got to be authentic. You can't just go and be like, yes, I love playing chicken dance. I love doing, you know, it's like, you either, that's why we don't do those things. I can't authentically play the cha-cha slide. I can hit play on it and watch people do it, but I'm not getting out there.
Kind of digging into creating Toast and Jam as Mary Free. And you start building the structures, you go down this path, and you discovered something that was broken internally. A key person on your team had become a gatekeeper. When did you first see that, and really what did that cost the business?
In many ways, it wasn't their fault. I mean, the company before the pandemic was run in a very specific way. And the woman who was running that, her name was Dina. She was great, but she did a great job of documenting how she did everything, because I think, you know, it was great. That's one thing she knew she had to do, because she knew that if she ever had to go on vacation, she wanted to be able to go on vacation and not have anybody call her. And so that was part of the reason why she was able to document things. But when the pandemic started, like, nothing was run the same. I mean, we had contracts that we were pushing years out. We, you know, people were trying to still book weddings, but it was a very tough time. And so, you know, trying to steady the ship was just a lot of band-aids. You know, it was a lot of, like, you know, how are we, you know, doing contracts? How do we do everything? Was and because she didn't know the stuff in the beginning, she wasn't able to, you know, implement it, because she didn't know what she was doing. And everything had changed. And so just, I'm trying to keep the business running. And at the time, I owned another business. I had bought a building in 2017 when I turned everybody into W-2. I also bought a building and started another business, because
why not?
Why not? Why not? I like to jump off of cliffs and build my wings on the way down. And I had started a co-working space. So I had a co-working space I was trying to run during a pandemic, and Toast and Jam. So I had a lot of things that were kind of taking my attention away. Not only was I homeschooling my child, and just everything was not cool. So I was very distracted, and I was just happy that there was someone who was running things. And then when I missed that thing of my son's, I was like, okay, I can't keep having my head in the sand around all of this. But I also, you know, it was her domain. She had taken it over. And in many ways, like, I was kind of, you know, like, no news is good news. Like, if I'm not getting any problems here, then it doesn't matter. But a bunch of problems started happening. So we started getting a lot more complaints. We started getting, DJs were just so mad at me all the time. Like, it was weird. Cause I'm like, I'm not doing anything. I barely even know this DJ. Why do they hate me? When we started kind of going through and doing all the audits and everything, it just, the culture had kind of fallen apart. And, I didn't know how a bill became a law. I didn't know how, contracts were made. I didn't know how we were dealing with leads. I didn't know how they're being doled out. And I couldn't get a straight answer on how that stuff was happening. And so I just kind of had to take it back. I was like, I don't know how things are going here. I don't, people don't know who I am. They don't trust me. The sales are, you know, the number of weddings we did was going down completely. I think we went down to like 250 weddings to almost like 300. We were like in the 300-ish era, which is, you know, as if you're doing the math there, like half of what we were doing before. And right. So I'm like, okay, why are we doing so few weddings? Why do I have negative money at the end of the year? Like, we're making over, like, well, like a lot of money, over $1 million. And I would have like negative $11,000 at the end of the year. And I'm like, what is happening here? Like, this is just, it just was, it, I'm like, what, this thing was such a great running boat, ship, spaceship. It was great. It was doing a great job. And all of a sudden just nothing was working. And I didn't know anything worked. And so I, you know, realized I just took it back over, and I came back in, I took over sales, I took over everything. And Melissa and I basically, along with Lorraine, had to completely bring sales in-house. That was when we realized we had to bring sales in-house. And we had to, hire a sales team. And I also realized that, you know, the new DJs weren't getting trained effectively. And that was a huge problem, because prior to the pandemic, I had done most of the training, and then everybody that was training people were trained by me. So it was like it was this nice self-contained unit, like, and I felt comfortable with anybody I had training other people, and they all had to be trained. So they all understood this was just a part of the deal. Like, you know, I was trained by Mary, you know, I'm going to now pass it on to somebody else. And the quality and the consistency was there. And the other thing I realized was that prior to the pandemic, we had an office, and every single meeting was being done in the office. So I was actually able to kind of see everybody having meetings. And I knew what they were saying was right or wrong. And if they're in a room with six other DJs, because like on a regular Tuesday night, it was like Grand Central Station, there'd be like 8 to 10 DJs having meetings in the office. So if a DJ was sitting there having a meeting, they could lean over to another DJ and be like, hey, what's up with the power situation at Cafe Brower or whatever? And they could all kind of, you know, ambiently train each other because they're all in the same rooms together. Well, with the pandemic, everybody came online. And that was also kind of one of the things that really degraded my culture, was like we weren't all in the same room ever together, ever. Like, that's one of the things I kind of hate about this return to work issue, that everyone's like, oh, we're just trying to, you know, help our corporate overlords and their real estate issues. And it's like, no, we didn't just start businesses so you could go work in your house and I never see you. Like, I care about this place. I love this place. This place is my entire personality. And so I want you here because I want you to understand what we're doing here. And when we're not all in the same room together, it's just hard to train. It's hard to know people. It's hard for them to trust me. It's hard for me to trust them. And so I realized, I'm like, I need an actual training person. Like, I need a person who understands me, understands what this job is, and can train these DJs effectively. And I had a DJ that came on during the pandemic. His name is Chris, and he is so good. And he lives and breathes this job. And we promoted him, and he has just flown. He is so, he's like maybe the sixth person I've tried to hire as a DJ manager. It's really interesting how hard it is to find the right people. But he's perfect.
It's very difficult.
It truly is. It really is. I think it's weird how hard it is. But Chris is amazing. He's so into it. He loves training people. He loves making sure they're perfect. And then we developed this whole thing around a DJ showcase where we rented a venue, and every new DJ came in, and we had them set up their gear and kind of act like they were doing introductions, and ran a whole thing. And so now I look at all those new people. We hired like 8 people last year, and I'm like, I know exactly how good they are. I know exactly what they're capable of, and I feel comfortable with them all going out in my name. And so, amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's huge. And then we started offering by 10,000 small businesses. Growth opportunity was to add photo booths and lighting to our services. And in January of 2020, I spent $26,000 on photo booths that were delivered on March 10th, 2020. And then they
Perfect
sat
timing.
There. Yeah, sat there in boxes, sat there in boxes, becoming, kind of irrelevant. They kind of became, we don't even use those photo booths anymore. But I had to learn. I thought it'd be just so easy to add a new vertical. I thought, I'll just put it in here. No. You have to have a whole system around it. You have to have a system around it. You have to have websites. You have to have SKUs. You have to have inventory. I mean, you have to have people that can go set it up. So that was a learning curve, was adding all of that. But then I'm like, oh wait, we need another person to do that too. So then we wound up, I had hired a DJ who had done lighting before, and she actually is more into lighting than DJing. So she still DJs, but now she's my additional services manager. And she's able to deal with all that. And her name is Rika. And she's also just, she's so good. And like, so now it's like, so it was the combination of, you know, Lorraine coming in and systemizing everything from a, like, you know, we have a regular meeting every week. We never did that. We have a meeting every single week, every Wednesday. It is, the only time you miss it is if I'm on vacation. We're religious about it. It's at the same time every week. Sometimes it's a bit longer than it should be, but we have a weekly meeting. We have quarterly goals. We have annual goals. We've got 3-year, 5-year, and 10-year goals. And we've got the people. And the people are the most important part. Like, I mean, having Melissa, once Rika seemed to be getting it, and Chris got it, and Melissa, she understands everything. She's a super hard worker, and she can anticipate. She can read my brain. She can read my mind. And that was something that Dina used to do. Dina was like the queen of reading my mind. Like it was amazing. She just knew me. And I don't know if that's intrinsic or imperative for most people that own their businesses to have a mind reader. I don't know how easy those are to find.
Not easy.
But I found 2.
Useful.
And yeah, very useful. So Melissa loves, she's made me think that she loves this job. Once I had all 3 of those in place, I'm like, those are it. That's it. And so the last year I had been kind of like homering into the bushes on a lot of stuff. Like I wasn't on the reviews this past year. Like, I let Chris and Melissa just do the reviews, and it was like, I hate reviews so much. I hate them. I hate them. I hate them so much. I like being able to say the nice things, but I hate having to say, so you've been really bad about your communication. Like, I listened to this podcast called The Lonely Island and Seth Meyers podcast, where Andy Samberg and the guys that he made all the shorts, like Lazy Sunday and I'm on a Boat, like these kind of comedy shorts that were on SNL like 20 years ago. The website, all they do is just recap just the shorts they did. And it's the most, I can listen to it forever. It is like so positive and fun and easy, especially during this time where everything is kind of poopy and gross. But one of the things, they give you a lot of like BTS and like, you know, how the sauce is made at SNL. And they were like, yeah, Lauren doesn't hire or fire anyone. And
conflict avoidant.
Yeah. And I was like, so Lauren Michaels doesn't hire or fire anyone. Can I not hire or fire anyone?
Indeed, like, you can avoid all of that.
It was honestly hearing them say that, that might have been the final nail in the coffin of me sticking around and feeling like I have to be completely involved in my business on everything. Because I'm like, if Lauren Michaels can like not do that, and not to say that I'm running an organization like SNL, but just that that's a thing. Like, I have to get my leadership ideas from the weirdest places because I don't know where else to get them. Like, I don't have an MBA. I have to like steal ideas from other visionaries.
Hey, well, I mean, that's probably the best way to learn overall.
Yeah.
So when you think about your business working without you now, pretty much, you don't have to hire and fire anybody. You don't have to have the hard conversations if you don't want to. And it does create a different type of ceiling. It's one that is, hey, if your company no longer really needs you to execute the day-to-day, who are you without it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a...
So that's the question for you.
That is a very good question. And I'm not even at the point yet where I mean, technically April 1st, I'll be... That's my quote-unquote, like, I don't work at Toast and Jam anymore date, and I'm just the owner. And I don't know if that's actually going to happen. We'll see how it goes. But I will say it has been a mind F, can I say that? To be kind of thinking about... what my life is going to be. This isn't the first time I've had to grapple with this. Like when I got pregnant, I was like cramming in as many gigs as I could do when I was pregnant. Cause I was like, I don't know how this is going to work once I have a baby. You know, I definitely obviously stepped back from DJing. I definitely stepped back from the company, but I was still like involved, but I had to go through like an ego death around that. Cause I was like, I was no longer just DJ Mary Niecy. I was no longer just Mary from Toast and Jam. I didn't even run my business anymore. I mean, so I had to deal with kind of like a weird identity thing around that, which I don't even know if I've completely squared yet. The thing now is, you know, I kind of talk about it with other business owners because I'm just kind of floating it where I'm just like, hey guys, am I retiring? I don't know what I'm doing exactly. And the looks I get are kind of like, what? That's a thing you can do? And I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to be part of the problem with me being still in the business is that I have the sword of Damocles hanging over my head at all times. There could be something that could happen on Saturday night where a DJ gets in a car accident. And I mean, we have a backup system. We have on call and backup, but like, I always feel like there could be a point where I could get pulled in and have to do a wedding. And that, even though it's highly unlikely at this point, it still hangs over my head. Like, I am, the buck stops with me. Like if something happens, I'm going to have to go and do it. And I hate that feeling. I hate the feeling that there like might be something that could mess my life up at all times. And so that's part of the reason why I'm trying to psychologically make this thing happen, because I don't want to have to be the backup DJ anymore. But it also keeps me from being able to think about other opportunities or what I want my next thing to do to be, because I always feel like I'm not really out of it. Like, I might be able to say I don't really do anything, but at the end of the day, I'm going to have to do it. And so I'm trying to alleviate the responsibility of me having to do that. And I already am feeling it like by not doing the reviews was like, that was like a huge thing for me. And that made me feel like, okay, they don't need me. Like they don't need me. I'm not the right person for this job anymore.
Will you start another business?
Well, I'm already sort of like, so I...
here it is. I kind of already started this bike delivery business.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So part of the ego death that I was having around all of this was like, I'm like, okay, so I'm 51 years old. I am a very good DJ. I have been DJing these events forever. I still love DJing. I'm still really good at it, but like, I'm not going to DJ at the club. I don't want to DJ at the club. And I don't want to DJ at like bars for like 28-year-olds. Like I don't like I'm like who can I make dance that I want to make dance, because it's like, and I last January of 2025 a friend of mine owns a restaurant, and I'm like, can I do a dance party at your restaurant where it's just all women and it's early, it's like from 7 until 10 p.m. because that's like what I want to do. And she's like, that's weird, but okay. And so we did it, and it was like, it sold out in like a week. And then we doubled the capacity for the next one, and it sold out in a week. Not even a week, I think 2 days it sold out. And I've now moved it into clubs. And so I am DJing, it's called Hot Flash Dance. And it's a punctual party for rowdy women is the tagline.
And Hot Flash Dance, that's kind of funny.
Isn't it good? Isn't it yeah. so good? Yeah. They are the greatest joy of my life. Like, I don't think I've ever been so happy in my life than when I'm DJing those. And I feel bad because I've got like a husband and a child and, you know, friends. But this is the best thing I've ever done in my life. I also own a business, a very successful company. And I'm like, nope, this weird dinky dance party is actually the thing that's most exciting to me. But it is. And I, you know, it's like last year I went from DJing to 65 people at the beginning of the year, and like the last two or 350 plus, and I sold them out. And so there's something here. There's other DJs that are doing this. So I know that it's something that people want. And so I really am trying to, I'm trying to be a traveling touring DJ at the age of 51. And it's like, again, I have no peers. There's not a lot of 51-year-old female DJs who are still trying to do it. And so it's, but I feel like if anybody can do it, it's going to be me, because I can and I know how to do it. I really, like, one of the things I really want to do is I would love to be able to figure out a way to be able to consult and kind of help other business owners. Like with other business owners, they're always like amazed at like the advice I come with, and or the things I say, or the things I help, the way I help them. And it's like, I guess I know this pretty well. And so I don't know how to do that though. Maybe I need to become an implementer.
There you go. You can become an EOS implementer and join the 900 others doing the same thing with similar
journeys.
But I'm bad
at the math. It's the math. The math.
You don't need to know math.
Really? I feel like Lorraine does a lot of math for me. I feel like there's a lot of math that Lorraine is pulling off for me.
That's her skill. Not every implementer knows how to do that.
Oh.
Yeah. When someone is watching this and is running a business that depends mostly on them, or if not entirely on them, they're exhausted, they're people pleasing, they're afraid to let go of control. What would you want them to hear from your experience?
I mean, I think the not wanting to give up control, I think, is always the thing that everyone thinks that their way of doing it is the only way to do it. And if they, you know, it's going to take so long to train somebody to do what they're doing that they don't even consider it as an option. And, you know, and I feel like that was the thing I had to get over the most, you know, was realizing that, you know, my way isn't the highway. The highway and the my way are the same thing, right? I don't know. Anyway, so all it takes is just that little entry point. Like, once you can kind of like let one thing go, then you realize that it can all be let go. Because when people are DJs, there's this idea like, why are you paying Mary? Why don't you just go off and do it yourself? And it's like, okay. Like, go do it yourself, but you won't work every weekend. You won't be working at the best venues in the city. You won't be, you know, coming with someone who's going to do your contract and take care of complaints and have your insurance. And I mean, everyone thinks it's such a fun idea to be an entrepreneur, and, you know, you're so lucky, and, you know, what's it like to get to do your, it's like, I had like, what's it like to be your own boss? You know, you and I'm like, I have many bosses. All I have are bosses. My employees are my boss. My clients are my boss. Like, it's not like being an entrepreneur, I think, is a calling. I was going to be an entrepreneur, whether it was DJs or whatever. This was the thing that finally hooked me. I wasn't meant to work for other people. I can't work for other people. I am not a team player. I'm just not. I'm not a team player. I mean, I am insofar that I can work with other people, but like, I'm not that closely. Like I can work with a photographer, but I can't, there can't be two me's in a room. And I think that is it's not fun. It is hard. I've never met an entrepreneur that's like, this is the best thing I've ever done. And I'm really glad I did this. And this is the right thing to do. Like every entrepreneur regrets it and hates it, but also there's nothing else that they would do because they can't. And that's the, like, you know, it's, you know, I don't wish my life on anyone, but also my life is great.
Totally get it. Totally makes sense. It's sort of like, I want to be in shape. I want to be strong. And what an entrepreneur does is say, well, okay, so I need to go put myself in the gym all day, every day, whether I want to or not. And you've kind of created this world in which you have no other choice but to go to the gym. And so you grow over time. You get better and better as you go. And it's a choice.
When I tell people about like the pandemic and how the events and just all the, they're like, why didn't you stop? Like, why didn't you quit? Like, I know so many businesses that quit during the pandemic. And I'm like, I didn't have an option. I had the money of hundreds of people. And, you know, and luckily, you know, I had a contract that was strong enough that I didn't, you know, it protected me. I had a great contract. If I didn't have that contract, I don't even want to think about how my life would have been if that contract wasn't as good as it was. But I didn't have an option to quit. And even if, and I did, I probably could have taken out a loan and given everybody back their money and just been in debt for the rest of my life. And I think some people do that and they didn't need to, they just needed to power through. And I just believed in myself too. Again, I didn't have an option in my mind. And I love having, you know, my back up against the wall. It's like where I thrive the best is when I'm being sort of like threatened or like, you know, being dared to not be able to do something. Like I'm speaking at a thing in a couple of weeks and I'm like barely even started my talk, which I probably shouldn't be advertising this, but I'm like, it's gonna be great. I'm not really gonna be the best speaker that they have there. And I haven't even started this yet. You know, like it's, I jump off the cliff and I build my wings on the way down.
Which is just a great entrepreneurial trait. We see this amongst many, many of the visionary entrepreneurs that we get the pleasure of having conversations with and helping grow their businesses. Mary, thank you for being so honest about the ceilings that you've hit, whether it's audits or the pandemic or what you're going through now with a little bit of a, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
Building in the next company. And so here you are, you're a woman who stumbled into DJing from a community radio request line, building a company that plays over 700 events a year. You DJed for the President of the United States.
Twice, actually.
Twice. That's amazing. The ceiling wasn't the pandemic. The ceiling wasn't money. The ceiling was the question that you had to answer after the rebuild. If the business works without me, what am I here for? What am I going to do next? And that's the ceiling most entrepreneurs never see coming. It's not failure. It's not competition. It's the moment, the thing that you build outgrows the version of you that built it in the first place. So I wish you all the luck. And so to everyone listening, here's the question. Are you building a business that can run without you? And if it can, are you ready for what that means? All right, let's dive into the five leadership abilities for Mary, starting with simplify. Mary simplified the client experience by removing complexity and judgment. No chicken dance, no macarena, no forced embarrassing traditions. Clear, non-negotiable standards that made every event more consistent. She also simplified the sales process by bringing it in-house rather than relying on a fragmented contractor model. And then she found her one entry point of delegation, trusting Melissa. She discovered that simplicity cascades. One trusted handoff unlocked the ability to trust the whole system. Now on to Delegate and Elevate. Mary delegated to Dina during the pandemic, but without the right structure. Dina became a gatekeeper rather than a grower, blocking new DJs and mismanaging leads. Mary had to take back control before delegating intentionally to Melissa and promoting Chris into a DJ manager role, running showcase training events. The real elevation happened when Mary transitioned to owner only, and that happened just recently on April 1st, completely out of the daily operations. Then came her identity crisis. If the business doesn't need me, who am I? Next is predict. Mary predicted the contractor to employee shift before it was forced on her. The two IRS audits in 2017 were that signal, and she converted her entire DJ workforce to W-2s before legal exposure became catastrophic. She also predicted market demand by removing gendered language and adding marriage equality messaging to the website, which immediately led to an increase of 200 weddings per year, hot flash dance and dance party for women at 45 and over is her next prediction in action, scaling from 65 to 355 people before she's even fully committed to it. Next is Systemize. Mary ran on Moxie and Natural Organization for years, but EOS implementer Lorraine Hardin gave it formal bones. The result, weekly level 10 meetings, quarterly and annual goals, a 3, 5, and 10-year vision, a proper training system through DJ showcases led by Chris, and a sales function with one owner, and that's being Melissa, rather than Patrick contractors. And then Trainual and getting documentation really underpinning the DJ training process. The pandemic really exposed her to systems that had single point of failure, and EOS has fixed that overall architecture. Finally, structure pre-EOS, the structure was Mary and everyone else. Post-EOS, there are clear seats. Melissa owns the operations and sales. Chris owns the DJ training and management. And Rekha handles additional services. Mary sits above it all as the owner, not the manager, not the operator, and not the DJ. The W-2 conversion was also a structural decision, not just a legal one, changed the entire employee relationship and accountability model. The company can now run 700 events a year without Mary touching any of them.